Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Confessions of an Economic Hitman, 3rd edition by John Perkins, is a provocative non-fiction account that argues modern imperial influence often arrives through spreadsheets and development loans rather than armies. Drawing on Perkins's experience as a consultant in the global development and finance world, the book describes how large infrastructure projects, international lending, and corporate interests can intertwine with geopolitical strategy. Perkins presents the idea of an economic hitman, a professional who helps steer countries into massive debt by promoting ambitious forecasts and borrowing packages that funnel money to contractors and entrenched elites, while leaving the public with long-term obligations. The 3rd edition is commonly associated with updated reflections on how these dynamics may have evolved, the resilience of the underlying incentives, and the broader consequences for democracy, the environment, and human rights. Whether readers approach it as memoir, warning, or debate starter, the book invites scrutiny of how power operates in the global economy and what accountability might look like when policy, profit, and persuasion converge. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the economic hitman framework and how influence is engineered. A central topic is the book's depiction of influence as a process that looks technical and benevolent on the surface. Perkins frames the economic hitman role as someone who sells a story about growth, optimistic projections, cost-benefit analyses, and development narratives that make huge loans seem inevitable and responsible. The mechanism is not presented as a single conspiracy switch, but as a chain of incentives. Governments want fast progress and prestige projects, consultants and contractors want fees, and lenders want interest and strategic leverage. The result, as the book argues, is a system where the appearance of neutral expertise can mask political goals. Readers are asked to consider how numbers become persuasion tools, how feasibility studies can be structured to favor predetermined outcomes, and how institutional authority can reduce skepticism. This topic also raises uncomfortable questions about complicity. Even if no one actor controls the whole machine, the combined effect can still be coercive. The book encourages readers to watch for patterns, debt-based development, concentrated benefits, diffuse costs, and dependency that reduces policy freedom. The framework is meant to help readers decode the language of aid and investment and identify who truly gains power from a deal. Secondly, debt, development projects, and the trap of dependency, another major topic, is the way large-scale infrastructure and modernization plans can become a debt trap rather than a pathway to broad prosperity. The book argues that loans tied to ambitious projects often recycle money back to foreign firms through engineering, construction, and consulting contracts. Local leaders may gain political capital and a visible legacy, yet the country inherits repayment obligations that constrain future budgets. Perkins emphasizes the long timeline of these commitments. Interest, refinancing, and structural conditions can outlast administrations and narrow what governments can do for health, education, and social protection. The topic is not simply anti-development. Instead, it challenges the assumption that bigger projects automatically yield inclusive growth. It invites readers to evaluate distributional effects, who gets electricity, roads, and jobs, and who pays through taxes, austerity, or reduced public investment. It also highlights how dependency can become self-reinforcing. When debt burdens rise, governments may accept additional financing, concessions over natural resources, or policy alignment with creditor interests. This topic helps readers interpret development headlines with sharper questions about ownership, procurement, corruption risk, and the difference between national GDP growth and lived well-being for most citizens. Thirdly, corporate and geopolitical interests shaping foreign policy. The book places corporate incentives alongside national strategy, arguing that foreign policy can be influenced by the promise of market access, resource security, and profitable contracts. Perkins's narrative suggests that development lending and project finance can serve as instruments of soft power, aligning client states with the priorities of dominant economies. This topic explores how private companies, consulting firms, and financial institutions can benefit when projects proceed, regardless of whether outcomes meet public needs. It also examines the blurred line between economic objectives and geopolitical aims. Strategic basing rights, voting patterns in international forums, and preferential treatment for multinational firms can be linked, implicitly or explicitly, to the flow of capital. A key takeaway is to view major deals as multidimensional. They are not only financial transactions, but also bargaining chips in a wider relationship. The book prompts readers to think about lobbying, revolving doors, and the way expertise can be mobilized to justify predetermined agendas. Even readers who dispute parts of Perkins's framing can use this topic as a lens for analyzing real-world events. why certain projects are prioritized, why some leaders receive support, and how economic narratives can legitimize power projections without overt military intervention. Fourthly, moral injury, persuasion, and the psychology of complicity beyond geopolitics, Perkins emphasizes the human side, how professionals justify ethically ambiguous work. This topic focuses on the psychology of persuasion and self-persuasion. In the book's telling, individuals can enter a system seeking success, status, and the satisfaction of building, and gradually adopt the assumptions that make the system feel normal. Rewards, career advancement, and social validation can reduce the urge to question who is harmed. Perkins also describes the use of social pressure and selective information, presenting only positive data, minimizing risks, and framing dissent as naive or anti-progress. The theme is relevant to anyone in business, government, or nonprofits because it highlights how ethical drift can happen without dramatic moments of decision. The book encourages readers to watch for warning signs, conflicts of interest, incentives that reward deal volume over outcomes, and narratives that label affected communities as obstacles. It also raises the possibility of moral injury, the internal conflict that arises when actions violate personal values. By focusing on inner conflict and rationalization, this topic broadens the book from a global critique to a personal ethics case study, asking readers how they would behave in similarly structured environments and what safeguards might help people speak up sooner. Lastly, consequences and alternatives, accountability, sustainability, and citizen agency. A further topic is the long-term impact of the described system and what can be done about it. Perkins links debt-driven development to political instability, weakened institutions, and environmental harm when projects prioritize extraction and rapid buildouts over resilience. The third edition is often approached as an update that connects earlier patterns to newer realities, such as globalization, financialization, and evolving corporate power. The book encourages readers to think in terms of accountability and alternatives. What would responsible development finance look like if projects were evaluated by distributional outcomes, ecological costs, and local consent rather than headline GDP gains? It also points toward the role of citizens, journalists, and independent analysts in scrutinizing contracts, challenging inflated forecasts, and demanding transparency. This topic is practical because it reframes the reader from observer to participant. Even without direct policy authority, readers can support ethical investment standards, push for corporate disclosures, and favor institutions that prioritize community benefits. The book's lasting contribution here is the insistence that systems persist because they are profitable and opaque, and they change when incentives shift and information becomes harder to hide. The topic invites debate, but it also offers a framework for action grounded in curiosity and accountability. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want to understand how global power can operate through finance, development policy, and corporate contracting. It will appeal to students of international relations, economics, and political science, as well as professionals in consulting, engineering, finance, journalism, and public policy who want to examine the ethical and systemic implications of their fields. Readers can benefit because the book trains a practical kind of skepticism. It encourages you to look past reassuring labels like development, modernization, and investment, and ask sharper questions about incentives, debt sustainability, procurement, and who captures the gains. That mindset can improve how you evaluate news, vote on policy, or make career decisions, especially in sectors where numbers and expertise carry authority. Compared with similar books on globalization or debt, this one stands out for its accessible narrative approach and its focus on the mechanics of persuasion, how forecasts, contracts, and institutional credibility can steer outcomes. Even if you do not accept every claim, it is worth buying as a catalyst for critical thinking and discussion, offering a memorable framework that can be tested against real-world cases and supplemented with other sources for a balanced view. If you would like to support John Perkins, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.